frío. Он блюбери хил. Он блюбери хил. When I found you, the moon stood still. On blueberry hill, and linger until my dreams came true. The wind in the willow played love's sweet melody, but all those vows we made never to be. Though we're apart, you're part of me still. For you were my thrill on Blueberry Hill.
I found my thrill.
Come claim the human need, baby.
We'll see what we shall see.
I'll bring my own with me.
I'll live with you where babies are blue.
Each afternoon we'll go.
Higher than the moon we'll go. Spend the waiting to let go.
Welcome, friends. Good to be back with you again. I'm Henrik. This is Red Ice TV. We are doing another no-go zone here today because it is. How about that? It is Odin's Day today, Wednesday. It's good to see you all. Hope you're enjoying your time on this planet, because it might be drawing to a close real damn quick if our friends at the top of the pyramid have a saying things. If they don't do it with engineered viruses, if they don't do it with artificial famines, if they don't do it with basically grinding civilization to halt, well, maybe we'll see what happens next. Maybe we can have like an alien invasion or something like that, which actually goes, a gay op that actually goes real eventually. We'll see what happens. I'm sure there's a bunch of tricks up their sleeve here. But anyway, we're going to talk a bit about some of the situation in Ukraine today as well. Continue the coverage on this. It has been... It's just nuttery continues. It just doesn't end. And we do need to cover some of it. We do have a little bit of some other stuff later on in the in the show as well. We'll see how far and deep we get into it here with Ukraine, because usually it takes longer sometimes to cover certain things. But we'll see. We have some other stuff at the end. So if you're tired of Ukraine and stuff already, stick around. We have some other stuff. Maybe not the most important thing considering what's going on, but we'll get to it. Anyway, this is kind of an interesting piece here from New York Times just out today. That's the New York Times logo at the top, in case you're wondering. We will forget much of the pandemic, and that's a good thing. And of course, the graphics that they're using is showing the alleged COVID, the outline of the coronavirus, COVID-19. Well, that's the disease, right? SARS-2, then, particle, molecule. Being just vacuumed up, put into the memory hole. Actually, in fact, I think even the URL that they used for it actually was memory hold. You know, so they're just going full, retard at this point. I mean, openly. I mean, admitting it. We talked about this. It will literally be as a little clip that we played in the beginning. They'll just switch it out. They'll swap it right out, and then on to the next thing. As we approach another anniversary of the pandemic onset, many of us are reflecting on the past 2 years, thinking about the ways the virus has altered our lives. More than 950,000 Americans have died. Many more have lost loved ones, and millions are still grappling with the lingering after effects of infection. As we begin to move towards a post-pandemic future, okay, so that's it then. It was just New York Times, and you got to remember, this is the the gold standard, right, in journalism. This is like, this is the place that you go to kind of get, you know, to tap into the sense of the times. What's going on? You know, let New York Times tell you what's going on, right? So I guess, I'm not sure if we should pin it on Putin or maybe it's Zelensky. Maybe we have NATO and Zelensky to thank for this. but, you know, what are you going to do? First Nobel Prize for Medicine goes to Vladimir Putin. Blueberry Hill, that's a fantastic piece there in the beginning. Cured the entire world of COVID in 48 hours. And basically, it's out of our ways right now. Pretty incredible. What are you going to do? All right, so on to some more serious things here. I mean, it is serious. It's absolutely insane that they're trying to claim that this is just over now, and that's it. What about the vaccine? What about the vaccine injuries? What about the side effects? All the people killed, all the people suicided, all the people lost their jobs, their businesses. Are we going to just forget about that now? I don't think so. Someone needs to be held accountable. Let me put it that way. That's the easy. That'll be the easy way out of this. All right. Anyway, so now we've seen Ukraine already do a couple of gay ops, things that turned out to be way exaggerated, and it looks like they're even willing to put the whole world hostage to get NATO and rest of the world to invade Russia and crush them on their behalf, which is, of course, very irresponsible at this point. Zelensky has made the conflict way worse. In fact, he was the one who made a bad call, a number of bad calls, in fact. We've talked about that now several times, but it needs to be repeated and reiterated that basically he tried to do the very things which Russia had kindly asked him. Don't do that. That will be a bad move on your part. We want you as a neutral nation. We want you as a buffer between the NATO countries and us and so forth. And of course, he didn't listen, right? So Zelensky, maybe we should call him, have done a number of bad moves, which of course has cost this Russian invasion. And instead of owning up to these mistakes and saying, shit, my bad, sorry, guys, let's try to work this out. Let's try diplomacy. Let's see what they want. What can we do about this? No, instead, of course, they're pushing, you know, now they're pushing child fighters, what do you call them, child soldiers to the front, right? Recruiting from all over the world, being asked for to send weapons, all these dumb moves, which is going to make it 100 times worse for Ukrainians. Anyway, so we'll see. So you know, we learned here a while ago that they were willing to put some other military troops. So we've seen them put them in schools, in residential buildings. Again, very irresponsible. But now we're back to the Chernobyl power plant thing again here. And this could be, of course, big if true, but you never know. This could just be basically a big gay op. And again, they're using this to say, look at Russia, you need to invade right now. And it looks like they're willing to use, the nuclear situation, whether that's a dirty bomb or whether it's an actual, you know, nuke that they will set up. Or in this case, they'll just use the Chernobyl power plant. As far as I know, they kept describing this as the nuclear power plant. Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't this decommissioned by now? Obviously, there's reactions happening, right? There's still cooling systems and stuff, but holy crap, this is just a big sarcophagus, as they call it, over the whole site right now, as far as I understand it. Anyway, so the claim here that the power has been cut to Chernobyl, the energy operator is saying this is a few hours ago now. Power has been cut from the former nuclear power plant at Chernobyl, Ukraine's state energy company has said, and maybe they're just lying, maybe they're just making it up. Ukrnergo blamed the outage on actions by Russian troops who seized Chernobyl nearly 2 weeks ago. The company said the conflict meant it could not restore power at Chernobyl, site of the world's worst nuclear accident in 1986. The head of the UN nuclear watchdog said the outage did not impact safety. Although no longer a working power station, Chernobyl was never fully abandoned and still require constant management. Spent nuclear fuel is cooled at the site as well. Rafael Grossi, director general of the UN watchdog, the International Atomic Energy Agency, said that even without an electrical supply, the spent nuclear fuel would not heat up sufficiently to cause an accident. Okay. All right. Well, that sounds good, but we don't know about this shit. Sometimes they will use this to blackmail the world, essentially, to go in on their side here. The acting head of Chernobyl nuclear plant, Valery Saida, told the BBC the generators had enough fuel to power the site for 48 hours. Okay, so we got, what do we have here? This is earlier today, so we got about maybe 30 hours left. Is that fair to say, 30 hours? The Washington Post had a story on it too. Chernobyl plant disconnected from power grid. That sounds, make it sound like it's intentional, right? Ukraine demands ceasefire for urgent repairs. Ukrainian presidential advisor Mykhailo Podolyak called it an extremely dangerous situation. I don't know what to make about this. Sometimes they just, they just claim that this is really bad and either something actually is happening, which is bad, or they're just pretending that it's bad in order to get the attention of the world, essentially, right? I'm not sure there's anything additional really in the story from the Washington Post, to be honest. They just say the same thing. It's Russia's fault, and maybe it is. Look, I'm not trying to say it's not, but they're playing with some fucking dangerous things over there. Let me tell you, that's not good at all. Ukraine blames Russia for power cut at Chernobyl plant, and says it could cause nuclear discharge. I think it was actually the first time it happened. It was actually detectors at. I think it might have been Ringhals in Sweden, or maybe it was another one of the Swedish nuclear power plants that first started detecting elevated levels. And of course, at that time, under the guise of the Soviet Union, in true Bolshevik fashion, they basically just lied about it and just said, no, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Nothing's going on. While the rest of the world were trying to pinpoint basically where is this coming from, right? As more and more detectors around the world was going off, especially in Europe. Then eventually they were forced to admit it, right? So another thing, of course, which is big bad news, not only for Ukraine, but for Russia and potentially other parts of the world as well, has to do with this thing. When it comes to the biological labs, but let's call it what it is. These are, bioweapons facilities, many of them that the U.S. have built in Ukraine, allegedly, and we reported on this a while ago. The Russian side is saying that these are a direct threat. This is a danger to them, while the U.S. have been scrambling to basically decommission them, right? They have removed documents. After Russia invaded, we showed this a while ago, but a good reminder as well. U.S. Embassy just removed all of their Ukraine bioweapon lab documents from the website, right? And this pointed to an actual URL, which they had removed. This page has never existed. If you were sent here, you may have been given disinformation. We showed this a couple of times now, but it is kind of funny. So now they moved some of the documents. They try to claim nothing's happening. And of course, again, this goes back to that deadly virus leak from a U.S. laboratory in Donbass back in 2010, where apparently 200 soldiers were hospitalized and about 20 had died from an influenza-style virus. And I think actually the story that's from, I guess, Archive 2010. I guess that story, is that what I'm seeing? Or is that an updated version or something? I'm not sure. The caption says January 22nd, 2016, 20 Ukrainian soldiers dead and 200 hospitalized over influenza-style virus said have escaped from a U.S. military biolab in Kharkiv, Ukraine. So anyway, back to this new story here. We have two contradictory stories, as usual, during the fog of war. You always get a contradiction. The other side is blaming the other side for what the other side actually is doing. That's a classic. Anyway, this is what the Russians had to say about it. Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov was talking about the threat to Russia from these labs. Listen.
It has arrived there, and we have data that the Pentagon is preoccupied about the chemical and biological installations in Ukraine, because Pentagon built two biological war labs, and they have been developing pathogens there in Kiev and in Odessa, and now they are concerned that they may lose control over these labs. And you know what it may be like in future, and the Americans decline flatly and resolutely to start a inspection mechanism as part of the Convention for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, and they build new chemical and biological facilities all across Russian borders. And, you know, many other developments happened. The CIA has been on the ground in droves, and they have been training the Ukrainian army not to wage a war with Poland, apparently. And when developments in Iraq happened, when the United States claimed it was a threat to the U.S. national security, did anyone ask back then why the United States decided to bring a territory 10,000 kilometers away from the American coast to order? Because the U.S. is a great power, but when Russia says that there is a threat to us, they start telling us that there is not a threat at all. But, you know, we will decide what is needed to provide for our security. When it's just close and next to our borders, we will not go 10,000 kilometers away to assert our rules.
All right, it cuts off there. But sometimes the language is difficult. I'm not sure if it's the live translation. Sometimes you kind of you understand what they're trying to say, but it's this the wording can be like, maybe it's hard or difficult or some other words that are used or something. But anyway, the point is well taken. I mean, look, I mean, yes, of course, there's going to be propaganda and lies from the Russian side. Obviously, I'm not trying to pretend there is not. But you have to look at the track record of the U.S., its agencies, its proxies, and all the shit that they've been doing over the last, you know, few decades. It's I mean, it's shitty. Just think, all the lies about the WMDs, what about the lies about babies and incubators? I mean, there's this lies that have taken American, so many Americans' lives, and then the lives of the people of the countries that they invade, right? I mean, we play that clip multiple times with Madeleine Albright, right, recognizing that, yeah, about 500,000 Iraqi kids died. It's kind of a tough situation, but, you know, we think it's worth it, right? We played it many times. Of course, they would have, it looks like Ukraine has been their little playground for quite some time after some of these coups, after they've been thrown over yet another regime and put new puppets in place and all that stuff. It's super corrupt, right? And it's not, you know, it's not the Ukrainian people's fault or anything like that, but they've been used. They're continued to be used for these agendas, right? Anyway, it says here, the presence of biological laboratories in Ukraine under U.S. leadership completely changes Washington's role. It is an instrument of direct threat to Russia, said Maria Zakharova, an official representative of the Russian Foreign Ministry. If the Ministry of Health of Ukraine has already sent relevant instructions to bio laboratories throughout Ukraine on February 24th, it means that the emergency plan has been activated. Zakharova said she went on to say that such laboratories were the site of American military biological experiments. I mean, all the shit with Biden and Hunter and the what was the company called again? I had some stuff on this too, and it's just like I've been trying to dig into that a bit more. Was it Burisma? Right, all that shit. It's like this just troves and troves of information about like all the corruption and the back and forth and the people stealing money, just taking out copious amounts of money. What was the last guy I was reading up on? Let me see if I saved that story. It was just like one here, Mykola Zlojevsky, right? Let me pull up this guy. It's like he's being charged, or, you know, for like running away with like 24 million. And again, it's like all these energy companies. Let me see. Check this out, this guy here. It's an interesting thread for you. This is, you know, Wikipedia, so you got to take some stuff with a grain of salt, of course. But you would think, at least if this is like tied to all the corruption when it comes to like the Biden regime and stuff, that they downplay, if anything, just how severe it is, right? Ukrainian oil and natural gas businessman, politician, Ukrainian oligarch, Mykola Vladislav Zlojevsky, right? Minister of Ecology and Natural Resources from July 2010 until April 2012. And just, you know, reading a little bit through here, some of the things. Burisma holding companies, right? What was it? Multiple people from the U.S. were put in, you know, high-level positions of Burisma. They made tons of money. They were like giving like, you know, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a month salaries and like, I mean, complete just, I mean, corruption through and through, right? anyway, there's investigations into Burisma and this guy. And he ended up taking off with about $24 million, U.S. dollars, I would assume. He fled to Cyprus, I think. He's like in Monaco or some shit like that now. Anyway, it's an interesting thread. It's a little bit on it. Interestingly, a House resolution was introduced in January 2021 by Marjorie Taylor Greene to impeach U.S. President Joe Biden for bribery allegations against his son, Hunter Biden, who served as a board member for Slovensky's company Burisma, right? Good for her to at least keep up with some of that stuff, right? All right, anyway, didn't mean to talk about that, but just, you know, just to underline that, there's like tons and tons and tons of corruption. And a lot of this shit is now, you know, coming out as a consequence of things being kind of dug up and a lot of focus on Ukraine and what's going on there. Like, people are pointing to all the biopharmaceutical companies, like tons of them are around the Kiev area, apparently. Anyway, so this is what Victoria fucked the EU Newland, this little Zionist Zog puppet there to oversee the transition of government as they put their person of favor in place in 2014. She had a central role in this crazy kook, and she's still there at the U.S. State Department. It's unbelievable. Victoria Newland, right? I mean, remember, John Hines Kerry was there. He was meddling with all this. All these people were tied to it. Listen to what she had to say about the biological research facilities. You know what that means. First they denied it. No, we don't have any such things. And then they remove all the documents there to cover their tracks. But we can't have them ended up in the wrong hands now, can we? Listen to this.
Ukraine has biological research facilities, which, in fact, we are now quite concerned Russian forces may be seeking to gain control of. So we are working with the Ukrainians on how they can prevent any of those research materials from falling into the hands of Russian forces should they approach.
Should they approach, right? And then they spun that, too. She spun that. Listen to this clip. Here's actually, of all people, Marco Rubio. I'm not sure if he's accidentally just got this to to get out there, whatever. Max Hughes over in Odyssey says, restore the Polish-Russian border before the Treaty of Versailles created Ukraine out of thin air. You know, I had a map from 1914. Thank you, Max. Appreciate that. Where is it here? Wrong keyboard. Here it is, right here. 1914. I say, let's restore it to this. Should we do that? Let's just do this. It's kind of a satirical map. I think it might be out of Austria or Switzerland, potentially. But it's funny showing all the different little, you know, empires as like a military man with a bayonet and a rifle with a bayonet on it, right? Look, it's this has gone back and forth and all that time. This is what happens basically when you have a bunch of people meddling and manipulating and using other countries, using other people, putting their politicians in place, doing gay ops over and over again. That's what happens. And of course, who gets to suffer? Well, both the Russian people and the Ukrainian people are the ones on the front line. They are the true victims. In all of this, while of course the West and NATO they're playing their game, and then Russia is playing their, you know, geopolitical game. It's annoying. You know, what are you going to do? Maybe restore the German Empire, Austro-Hungarian Empire, restore. I guess put the Russian Empire back before the commie revolution. And say, yeah, it's not a bad idea. I think I'm generally in favor of that. Lycan Warrior says Fauci probably had his hands tied, hands in the bio labs in Ukraine, just as in China. Yes, I would not be surprised if there's some, and again, they're scrambling and quickly try to cover this up. And back to the clip I was going to play before I did some of your chats here. This is Marco Rubio asking about this of Victoria Nuland. And listen to the switch here and the flip and the way that she's like trying to claim that the other guys are, they're of course the one who are going to be guilty of the very thing that we are going to probably do, or at least attempting to do. Listen to this here.
I only have a minute left. Let me ask you, does Ukraine have chemical or biological weapons?
Ukraine has biological...
She looks great, by the way. Doesn't she look great?
...research facilities, which, in fact, we are now quite concerned Russian troops, Russian forces may be seeking to gain control of. So we
are you trying to pretend that you're the good guys when it comes to handling these kinds of bioweapons and stuff? Look, I don't want to see them in the hands of anybody. Don't get me wrong. But you're saying that you having these labs literally on Russia's doorstep shouldn't be of concern to them, and that you and your ilk are the best people capable of handling these kinds of things. And it was it's only if it gets up in the hands of in someone else's hands that's when it's really dangerous. Oh, okay, sure, Newland, I'll buy that one.
Working with the Ukrainians on how they can prevent any of those research materials from falling into the hands of Russian forces should they approach.
I'm sure you're aware that the Russian propaganda groups are already putting out there all kinds of information about how they've uncovered a plot by the Ukrainians to release biological weapons in the country and with NATO's coordination. If there's a biological or chemical weapon incident or attack inside of Ukraine, is there any doubt in your mind that 100% it would be the Russians that would be behind it?
There is no doubt in my mind, Senator, and it is classic Russian technique to blame on the other guy what they're planning to do themselves.
You got to give him. It's beautifully executed. You got to say. Perfect delivery of projection. I guess that's why these slime balls are in the position that they're in. If the Ministry of Health in Ukraine, yeah, we talked about that, going back to what the Zakharova said here in Russia. She went on to say that such laboratories were the site of American biological experiments. This completely changes the picture of U.S. involvement in the fate of Ukraine. It is not just an instrument of influence. It's not just an instrument of containment. It is an instrument of a direct threat to our country, Zakharova summed up. Previously, Russia stated that over 30 laboratories in Kyiv, Kharkov, and Poltava were working with dangerous infectious agents as part of the U.S.-led military biological program. A Pentagon spokesperson said on Tuesday, this absurd Russian misinformation is patently flawed, false, Reuters reported. So I guess it's not true at all, but now they're admitting that they have them and they could have in the wrong hands. But we don't have them. It's just misinformation. They try to squirm their way out of this. It is truly incredible. But what are you going to do? Victoria Nuland, I'm just, holy shit. I mean, again, and the people on that side is just the most corrupt, ruthless. I mean, and then they're using the Ukrainian people as a shield, literally as a human shield. All of Ukrainians in their little geopolitical petty fight with Russia, right? All right. Anyway, so we've played some stuff regarding. Yeah, we'll get to that one. I don't think there was another clip there. By the way, let me just double check. I think that was it there. Okay. Yeah, so we've talked about some of the very effective propaganda to get, you know, various people to line up. We saw that one guy, the British guy, the other day. We played that, right? Of him going to fight, you know, hey, it looks like Ukraine need, strong young men. I'm here to line up, you know, kind of thing. Well, Canada, of course, Canadians are doing the same thing. Look at this clip here.
Canadians are joining thousands of people around the world in the fight for Ukraine, many with no connection to the war-torn country. I'm Christina Howarin, and these heroes in the making are answering the call for help from Ukrainian President Zelensky, willing to risk their lives in the name of freedom.
I just can't watch that anymore without, you know, doing anything about it. So, you know, I don't know the impact I will have, but I'm going to go do what I can do and help as many people as I can.
England is from the Kawartha Lakes area and lives in Alberta working as a pipeliner. The former firefighter registered with the Ukrainian embassy before he left yesterday to fly to Warsaw and then start the drive to the Poland-Ukraine border.
I do not have any military experience, but what I do have is I was a fireman. I did fire department, forestry firefighting, oil field firefighting, and natural disaster response and rescue. So I have some medical background and other aspects of my life. Like I did a lot of got in survival pretty heavily survival and bushcraft, and I probably slept in 12 different jungles.
Well, there you go, bushcraft. Good luck with the bushcraft. What the fuck? Look, is this really? Look, we're seeing these, you know, oh my God, the human toll and the cost and the blah 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 human. Look, I don't like it. I'm not trying to laugh at it or anything. Yeah, I'm not trying to minimize it. It's disgusting to see the greater agenda by the boys and the witches at the very top of this thing, benefiting from people being killed. Ukrainians, Russians, all of them, right? It's disgusting to see two of these European countries at war in this way and being used by NATO and Western global homo forces, Ukraine primarily, is to get at Russia, right? But is the propaganda is so strong, so powerful, so pervasive, and so just ubiquitous, and it was just like overnight, boom, and it was like this, the frequency went on, or so. I'm not sure what's going on. I'm not sure why some are immune and some are not. I'm not sure what's going on, but it's this like just overnight overdrive, and it's just like people. Yep, that's it. I'm gonna go. I don't know how to do anything. I know bushcraft. Like I'm really good at bushcraft. Let's go to Ukraine and line up in front of fucking Russian tanks and die. More young white men who should be fighting for their country. They should have families. They should have children. You should not go and fucking die for the globalist scum in a foreign country which they've never even been to. That's my, call me crazy, but that's my take on this. And I call it irresponsible by everyone who's pushing out this propaganda. So we get these men, in many cases, very young men, to go fight and be cannon fodder. I think it's ridiculous. But there's more here. Listen to this.
All through Central America.
He's meeting up with other volunteers from the UK and the US.
This pin pulls off.
Most like him, with no ties to Ukraine.
I've actually never been to Europe. This will actually be my first time going to Europe. But I just want to help, and that's my goal, is to go there and help.
Well, yeah, you're gonna help by bringing more dead bodies on the line. That's what that's how you're gonna help, buddy.
As many people as I can. Like, if it's through fighting on the front lines, then it's fighting on the front lines. If it's escorting people to safety to the border, then I'm okay with that.
Ukraine's foreign ministry says about 20,000 people from 52 countries have applied to fight alongside Ukrainian forces against the Russian invasion. Oleh Hileniuk is thankful for the camaraderie. The 26-year-old has been in Canada since November, but returned home this week to do what he can.
And a lot of my friends right now defending Kyiv, and some of them are hiding in the bunkers and shelters. Some of them are at the frontier. Some of them are in West Ukraine and helping with the supplies and coordinating all other kind of work. So it made me impossible to stay in DC in safe place, enjoy the peaceful life.
Yeah, I mean, at least this guy is Ukrainian, which is like, I totally understand that. You want to go fight for your country and stuff. I still think it's, again, the leadership in Ukraine has been so irresponsible. And again, I mean, it's essentially, as far as I understand, the demands and something might change or whatever, but they've had so many coups anyway. Latest thing I read, and you never know if this is true or not, but allegedly, at least, the Russian side says we don't want to have a regime change. We want to change that. They have other goals here. Make them in neutrality, you know, position, no NATO membership, no nukes, no, you know, none of these kinds of things, right? And stop them, you know, try to prevent them from being used by Western globalist forces, as far as I understand it. That would be, yes, it would be a fallback. But is there really people out there that think that a Ukraine under the thumb of the Western forces, which have worked now for decades to destroy our countries, right, to bring feminism, to bring, pedo stuff to the schools, right, to open our borders, to bring in, you know, tons and tons of migrants, to all these global homo policies and things like that. Are nations better off for this? Is there anybody, in a position of leadership in the West that are looking out for us or having our interests at heart? Now they're posing and claiming that they're caring, all of a sudden, but like an ethno-national. And again, yes, they fund the national socialist sides even in Ukraine, because again, to them, it's just cannon fodder. They don't care. They'll sacrifice these people. They'll happily do it. And if there's any survivors at the end, they're going to turn on them too. And they're going to be the first ones up against the wall. You'll see. You bet your ass that they're not going to be. They're not going to. Oh yeah, this Azov battalion here and the Adon, whatever the other one was called there, funded by Ihor Kolomoisky. We've talked about him planning. The latest Weekend Warriors show, we're going into depth on that, of like how both sides are like funded by and run by supposed Nazis, and both of them are Jewish, right? You have the Wagner group on the Russian side, and then you have the Azov group on the Ukrainian side. It's basically like two Jewish representatives funding and running Nazi, neo-Nazi operations so that they can have at it and kill each other. that's basically what's happening. That's how absurd it is, right? You got to see through this. But anyway, back to the clip, right? Just saying over on Entropy Stream says, Newland and Rubio acting as a tag team for Global Homo. Absolute repulsive. Yeah, it's interesting because I think in the effort from Rubio's perspective to try to kind of debunk these horrible lies about these biolabs or whatever, it's still kind of leads to interesting admissions where they recognize that they have them. And again, as they first deny that, they're destroying documents, they're trying to cover shit up, and then they're like, no, this is dangerous disinformation. And then like, oh, no, we have the labs, so we have to work on ensuring that they don't end up in the other guy's hands. That's wrong, you know? Anyway, a little bit more on this clipper. Let's continue.
While my country is, there is a danger of existence in the country.
Ole spoke with us from Warsaw. He and the impressive amount of medical supplies and gear he collected in BC arrived in Lviv last night.
I just need to do whatever I can, you know, because I cannot just run away from my country.
Men under the age of 60 can no longer leave Ukraine. Ole's decision to return home means he, a teacher with no military experience, could soon be on the front lines.
So that's one-way ticket, but I will do all in my power just to help our army.
Both men are nervous. Both are uncertain of the future. Both are committed to protecting a country only one of them knows.
The Ukrainian people have been strong. It's been amazing to watch. So I'm ready. I'm ready to do what I got to do.
I'm ready to die.
The Ukrainian government is looking for foreign volunteers. They're currently only asking for those with military, law enforcement, or medic experience to apply. Christina
Howard,
City News.
Yeah, let me see here. Just saying again over an interview says, yeah, when these idiots get killed by, and I don't mean to laugh at them. They're obviously manipulated. They're propagandized into believing they're doing the right thing here and stuff, right? But yeah, when these idiots get killed by the Russian military, the press will use it as an excuse for Western nations to attack. Brainwashed fools. I wonder if Russia could use my bushcraft skills, debris shelters, and friction fire could make the difference. LOL. Yeah, it's exactly. No, again, I think it's tremendously, it's beyond irresponsible. It's murderous. It's borderline genocidal to antagonize the situation, to ramp it up this way. And again, who is it that's dying here, my boys? Who is it that's going to the front lines dying? Well, for the most part, it's white men, European men, in another stuck between super corrupt, worst imaginable leadership at the top, and then they're the ones who are putting their lives on the front lines, right? It's sickening watching it. Now there's more of this here. Check this out. Here's like. A grandfather going to fight in Ukraine. Look at this here.
My name is Rob. I'm a 61-year-old grandfather from Scotland. I traveled from Edinburgh to Kiev to help in the fight against the Russians. I will do anything in my power to stop the Russians from capturing Kiev. Long live Ukraine.
Slow Ukraine!
Is that really the best thing for a 61-year-old Scottish grandfather to be to ensure that his kids and his grandkids, for that matter, is going to grow up without a grandfather? Is that the best way, really, in this situation? I don't know. It's just really tiresome watching this and how easy it is, right? How quickly it just turns and everybody's just in a hypnotic path to the next thing. All right, there's some other stuff happening here too when it comes to the refugees. We've talked about the situation when it comes to, you know, there's been like racism, and I've seen this from, there's some of the slightly more honest left-wing type press, like Gray Zone and stuff like that. But there's also other like outlet. I think even like Mint Press News is on this path and stuff like that too. They're like basically, oh, it's racism with because there's people who've said that the people dying here are like blondes and blue-eyed haired people, and these are Europeans, these are, you know, our people. This is a different type of scenario for us, right? And then there was an issue still where they claim that the foreign students in Ukraine are being discriminated against. On the other hand, the footage that we played and that I saw was actually Ukrainian women and children being ripped off from train cars by non-European men who are seeking to get out first. You know, if there was like a lifeboat situation, women and children, fuck that. Like, I'm on this lifeboat, you're out. That's literally what we saw. And I'm sure I'm seeing too much racism on the other side. But there's another interesting spin to this too, and it has to do with this story here with what's happening with Israel and refugees, right? But first, let's take a look at another clip regarding rabbis from Canada going to Ukraine to help with the refugee flow.
And the only way to be an informed advocate for the cause is to really see it for yourself. And we really wanted to be able to play that role on behalf of the people of Ukraine.
Instead of being here, a Montreal rabbi at the Shaar HaShomayim congregation in Westmount and three other Quebec rabbis are on the ground in Poland helping at the Ukrainian border as refugees flee the Russian invasion. The rabbis say they were compelled to step in.
And here are all Ukrainian refugees.
We're sitting in Montreal, and we're back in Canada and feeling helpless like everyone else is. We want to help, and we represent, and we're leaders in the Jewish community, and people are asking, what can we do? What can we do? And this was something we felt that we could do.
There is different relief organizations, NGOs offering food.
The rabbi spending time at the Medyka border crossing between Poland and Ukraine.
It's really hard to put into words what we've seen. There's a crush of desperate humanity crossing into Poland, talking not hundreds, not thousands, but literally hundreds of thousands of people. And we saw a refugee center yesterday in Warsaw. Today, we were at the train station in Premierfield, which is adjacent to the border. You see rooms packed with young mothers and children.
All of these individuals have just come from the Ukraine. They've walked over the border. You can see they have a bag and nothing else.
And they have no idea when they're going back home. The only thing they want to...
The ongoing war hitting close to home for the rabbis.
My family, as Israeli folk goes, comes from this region. And they were the ones who left as refugees a century or more ago. And tragically, when they left, there was no one waiting for them.
The rabbis say they wanted to be there to welcome others during this time, offering supplies like blankets.
Sometimes it's as simple as buying a candy bar and giving it to a kid on the street. And
a candy bar?
Understand that kid was in the safety and security of their own home just a few days ago, back in Ukraine. And now the world has been turned upside down.
What we're doing needs to happen a million times over because there's so many people in need. And we hope that the West continues to do what they're doing, open their doors more warmly.
The plan is for the rabbis to return home in time for the Sabbath to share with their congregations and communities the lessons they've learned.
We've seen extraordinary difficulty and hardship, but also some of the inspiration, which hopefully will inspire us to do more to help those who are in need.
In Montreal, Alicia Rubertucci, City News.
All right. So interesting part about this, too, obviously all European nations should help Ukrainian refugees and all that kind of stuff. Right. But this is kind of interesting. If you look at it in the opposite direction, right, there is actually people going to Israel, like to seek, refugee status and stuff like that. Well, surprise, surprise. Look at what happens here. Right. It's from a French source and so it's Google translated. So it might be a bit wonky, but we can understand the gist of this. War in Ukraine, Jewish or non-Jewish Ukrainians, Israel sorts out, right? They sort out who's who here before they can be let in. More than 250 Ukrainians fleeing the war in their country have joined the Jewish state in recent days to find refuge there. However, once they arrived at Ben Gurion International Airport near Tel Aviv, only Jews were allowed to enter the country. The others were turned away. Anger and the Ukrainian embassy, which strongly criticized Israeli officials, the Israeli Population and Immigration Authority has since modified the conditions for entering the territory, but it subjects these these non-Jewish Ukrainian refugees to strict conditions. Interesting. Why does it always turn out that way? Isn't that interesting? One rule for them, and of course we've covered many times how there's big active networks and groups like Israel, for example, funded by the Israeli, I think, foreign ministry, if I remember correctly, of how they're seeking primarily Middle Eastern, North African and Sub-Saharan African refugees and migrants to come into European countries, right? But then, of course, they deport Eritreans and Sudanese, you know, people that come to Israel and stuff like that. In fact, they even pay them money, pay their airfare. They pay them to never come back to Israel. And one of the stories we've talked about many times is how they sent them all to go to Sweden to seek refuge there, right? So Israel facilitated and brokered this deal of saying, no, you can't come into our country. You need to go up to, you know, Northern Europe, go to Sweden or something like that. Here's some money. Be on your way now, right? Interesting. It's always the same. Always the same with that. JP says, Henrik, did you see Yul Noah Hariri pleading with Germany to take on Russian military and promising them that they won't be called Nazis if they started Barbarossa 2.0? Here's the video clip. I've not seen that. Hariri. Who is that again? Let me see. Maybe there's something we can play in a moment here. Hariri. Oh, is that guy? I recognize that guy. We've played some clip. He's like a tech guy, isn't he? All right, we'll play that in a moment. Thank you, JP. I appreciate that. That could be interesting to listen to as well. Yeah, I saw another comment here. Beer Hall Putsch. Did I miss it now? Yeah, basically the gist of the comment that's on over on Odyssey was, I guess, Polish nationalists were calling out, people who they claim are pro-Putin or something like that. That it's anyone, what is it here? Anyone who supports Putin supports war against Europe. So this is what I'm so sick and tired. They have some list that with like names on it, I guess, whatever. But it's interesting to me that how it's this completely unrecognizable, like that if you can be anti-Ukraine, anti-NATO, anti-West, anti-global homo without being pro-Putin. There is such a thing. It's always says, no, you have to pick a side. So if you do this, you gotta kind of do that, right? And it's not about fence sitting. It's basically about recognizing that, like we have, as I've explained now many, many times, we have a disgusting cabal at the very top of this thing that's benefiting from both Russians and Ukrainians dying, from all the volunteers that are going dying, right? This is the sickening thing, and that's what you need to understand, that one side is being used as a sledgehammer against the other. And in the process, we have a geopolitical shift in Europe and stuff, and they're using, in fact, these Nazi groups such as Azov and stuff. And I don't mean that like in the you know, the West is always talking about Nazis and going after everybody's a Nazi and stuff, right? But it is interesting that in this case, they're literally just covering that up, essentially. They're just denying it. I have some more stuff on the other coverage that's happened, like in mainstream Western press, like PBS is having interviews with people who like, and they're blurring like an image. We will get to that, but it's like, and I think it's just retarded to like, okay, so if you have to justify of why you're pro Zelensky then, right? You have to justify that. You're saying you're lining up with Jens Stoltenberg, with Victoria Nuland, with all these State Department puppets, with all these global homo forces that joining around Ukraine, using it. Justify why you're pro that then. Justify why you're pro Biden. Justify why you're pro the very EU establishment that's now turning on Russia. Justify why you're for the very people that have been trying to replace us in our countries for decades. Why are you pro them, right? That's my answer to that. It's completely ridiculous, because it's always as well, just because if you criticize one side, it means you're super gung-ho and all about what the other side is doing, and you're supporting them in their efforts. What does it matter anyway? There's a bunch of people talking on the internet. It won't change anything, you know what I mean, in the bigger scope of things. I wish it did, and maybe some people will wake up from it. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying overall, this machine at the very top, this globalist machine, is just going to grind over people anyway. Just going to keep going. Doesn't matter what you do. All it's causing is more divisions and more fighting and more bickering and more blah, 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 you know. All right. Anyway, so let's continue here with the story. Let's play that clip there then, the JP sent. That could be interesting. Hariri. I recognize him. He was on like CNN talking about like, I think like implantable microchips and stuff and like tech stuff with the way he was been speaking at the World Economic Forum and stuff, I think. Let's play a bit of this.
See what some of the here. Seeds of this war were planted in the siege of Leningrad. And now it gives fruit in the siege of Kyiv, which may give fruit in 40 or 50 years in more terrible. We need to cut this. We need to stop this. You know, I look at Germany now, and what I really want to say, if there are Germans watching us, what I really want to say to the Germans, guys, we know you are not Nazis. You don't need to keep proving it again and again. What we need from Germany now is to stand up and be a leader, to be at the forefront of the struggle for freedom. And
can we get more Germans to line up and go die in a war with Russia? Hmm? That's what I'm hearing here.
Sometimes Germans are afraid that if they speak forcefully or pick up a gun, everybody will say, hey, you're Nazis again.
Is he basically, he's giving an N-word pass? That isn't this the equivalent of that? He's giving an N-word pass to Germans so they can go and die on the front lines in a meaningless war with Russia over something which shouldn't have been. It should never have happened because the manipulation of Ukraine to move in the direction that it has should never have happened. All right. Let's keep listening to this. It's interesting.
No, we won't think that.
That's happening right now. I mean, lots of things that were inconceivable just 10 days ago have happened in the last few weeks. And one of the most striking, to me in any case, is Germany's reaction and transformation. I mean, the new Chancellor Olaf Scholz the other day announced that Germany will send arms to Ukraine, and we spend an extra $100 billion in building up its army. That reverses completely the principles that has guided.
Can we have millions of Europeans going and dying in some war again? It's the prospects is fascinating, and it's okay. You get a pass. You don't have to. Maybe the propaganda was too hard. Maybe they're never going to go to war. How are we going to get them to die now? We need them to line up and shit. We ease off on the Nazis. Maybe that's also part of the ass of the looking the other way for that. You know, I don't care what they are. That's fine. They're fighting for their causes. Like, look, I'm sure some of them are very rational about why they're doing what they're doing. And some might not be. Look, I've seen some videos and stuff, and they're like crucifixion. Who knows what's true, right? It's like, it's just a bunch of fucking misinformation all the time, essentially. But this is fascinating because it shows that they're like, no, we need to ease off on the propaganda so that Germans are not afraid to go to war again and go die in millions to fight a meaningless war with Russia, right, at this point.
Guided Germany's foreign policy and security policies for decades. So that shift is happening exactly at this moment and very, very fast.
Yeah, and I think it's a good thing that we need the Germans they are now the leaders of Europe. Certainly after Britain left in Brexit. And we need them to, in a way, let go of the past and be in the present. If there is really one country in the world that, as a Jew, as an Israeli, as a historian, that I trusted not to repeat the horrors of Nazism, that's Germany.
All right. Yeah, so this guy is I guess he's just like slated as an intellectual. Again, I've seen him on like the World Economic Forum, their sites and stuff. Let me see here. What happened here? One second here. There we go. Here we are. All right, here we go. Here's the Wiki thread for him here. I saw that he was... I think he was talking about like new technology and stuff and like what we'll be able to do or whatever, something like that, right? An Israeli public intellectual, historian and professor in the Department of History at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, Yuval Noah Hariri. Is he? I thought he had a spouse there. Yeah, okay, all right. He's a homosexual. All right. Kat, thank you for that link. Appreciate that. That's fascinating. We appreciate that. JP, all right, so let's move on here. I'm a little, I'm clicking around here too much. Let me find my sources here. Sorry, guys. all flustered here. Huh? All right, so let me see where we are next here. We are, so here, look at this. This is kind of interesting. The next one here. Big if true, as they say. There's been some, supposedly there's some documents that have been released. I can up it full screen. I don't think many of you will be able to read it, but apparently these have been circulating, detailing. Let me read the caption here for it. The Russian Ministry of Defense claims that it has acquired documents belonging to the 4th Rapid Reaction Brigade of the National Guard of Ukraine dated this January that prove the Zelensky regime was planning an offensive against the Donbass republics this month. I'm not sure if it's March or maybe February then or something, right? But they had, look, they had increased their military activity there. They had, you know, been the target of one of the leaders, I think, in Donbass, right? They had been shelling various places. There was an oil gas pipeline that exploded. I think that was in Luhansk. So that had kind of been picking up, and that together with the nuke argument and the NATO membership and you know, this ever-approaching, you know, approaching Ukraine to the West and cozying up to them more than the other side, as opposed to staying in the middle of being neutral. That's, you know, what caused this much of this problem to begin with, right? This is getting huge play in Russia and a swinging popular sentiment firmly behind Putin. I cannot evaluate whether these documents are real or not, but on Twitter, at least, nobody with expertise is saying that they're fake, and many experts have said that they do look real to them. Time will tell, but so far the Russians have not put out any big lie, unlike the Zelensky regime. I'm not sure about that. Maybe they have. That's what's so hard about this, right? But anyway, here's some of the documents, and apparently that they were talking about an offensive there against Donbass specifically, right? But they've been shelling for a long time against in Luhansk as well. So that's interesting. Big if true. So here's more the friends then who are saying that just because you're anti-Zelensky and anti-NATO, then you have to be pro-Putin. I guess they will have to answer to why they're pro the very forces that have been at war with Europe for a few decades now, trying to replace the population. Why are you pro them, right? Why are you aligning yourself with the forces that have tied to Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum and all these, you know, Kolomoisky and all these people, right? Like Trudeau, Zelensky is an acolyte of the World Economic Forum. Ukraine's president Zelensky has stated that Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was one of the reasons that he got into politics after leaving his career as a comedian and an entertainer and becoming Ukraine's president in April of 2019. And again, remember, guys, this was before he played a role that he became the president of the Ukraine. In fact, we can show a quick clip, a trailer, right? This is the Servant of the People, it's called. And this is 2016, I think, something like that. Not subtitle or anything, but you'll get the idea, right? Of him basically killing the Ukrainian leadership at the time. And of course, that's because they, you know, the side that's aligning with the NATO and the West are seeing the ones that are like more neutral or even pro-Putin. They're seeing them as the traitors and they are doing a coup. And so we need to do a coup to have our guys in there. But anyway, this whole thing is going to be exported now to, I think, UK television. Channel 4 is picking up on the series, Servants of the People. I'm not sure if it will be dubbed or if it will be just subtitled or whatever. But they're going to play this shit because they're turning Zelensky into some kind of hero, folk hero here, basically. Here's a quick clip from, I think this is the second season of that show. Look at this here.
Я понимаю, что многие боятся этих реформ как огня. Но уж простите, господа, придется забыть. Про Мальдивы и Доны-Периньоны. Общество поменялось. И оно больше не будет ждать и прощать.
За один. Решение не принято.
Я тоже против. Я случайно зелененькую нажал.
Надо было меньше вчера на беленькую нажимать.
А что вас веселит? Что смешного? Да людям жрать нечего. Что в Днепропетровске, что в Днепре. И с детьми страшно по улицам ходить. И неважно, какая это улица. Кирова или Коновальца. И суд в нашей стране продажный. Что в Октябрьском районе, что в Шевченковском.
А кто в этом виноват? Вы! И вы! Я и моя фракция! Мы
работаем! Мы про вашу фракцию!
Не пропони, Кудла! Мы делаем все для страны!
Ты мне скажи! Ты мне скажи, почему вы не голосовали?
Is this actually exemplary of what we're seeing right now? We're seeing an infiltrator and one who's a puppet who's put in place by Kolomoisky and all these global homo forces, killing all the other Ukrainians. And like, are they corrupt? Yes. Are they ideal leadership? Definitely not. But is this the way to go? You decide. This is Victoria Nuland's guy right here. This is Jens Stoltenberg's guy right here. This is Heinz Kerry, John Heinz Kerry's guy right here, right? This is the EU's guy. This is the US guys. It's I don't know. I just how can you be pro this this buffoon, this obvious puppet, and think that anything good is going to come out of it? All right. Anyway. So I didn't mean to play that. That's I just remember I had the clip, but that's he's an actor, right? He's an actor, and he was like warning everybody about the corrupt politicians and stuff, and then he's literally like the wolf guarding the hen house, and he is the it was corrupt before, and then it gets even worse when he comes in the guise that he's going to be he's the guy who played the guy cleaning house on TV, right? Anyway, here he is. Zelensky hailed Trudeau as one of those leaders who inspired him to join politics when he became Ukraine's president in 2019. Great. Just the right guy that we need, right? While Zelensky has shot to stardom from relative obscurity from the perspective of the West since the Russia-Ukrainian conflict became international news, his admiration for Trudeau comes less of a surprise when looking into his background. Like Trudeau, Zelensky is an acolyte of Klaus Schwab's World Economic Forum. And, you know, again, apparently Putin was that too, right? He's been to many meetings, they're buddy-buddy. And then when the conflict broke out, they removed him from their websites and stuff. And they're, oh, no, we've never, he's not with us, you know, kind of thing. But that's what they do when they have people at the top, you know, doing their bidding or becoming they're a people's champion for a time. And then eventually they're like, they fell out of disfavor. Let's use them now as a dictator like they did with Saddam or like they did with, I mean, they've done it over and over and over again, right? They did it in Iran. They've done it in Egypt. They've done it in all these countries, right? The globalist organization behind the now infamous Great Reset Agenda, which tells the world that that by the year 2030, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. The ubiquitous support for Zelensky by the elite, including support from the Defund the Police and Black Lives Matter leftist mega donor George Soros. Trudeau, American President Joe Biden, and all sides of the mainstream media has led many to question the true motivation behind the West's condemnation of Russia and a concern that a push for yet another foreign war involving the West is underfoot. On Tuesday, for example, Ukrainian journalist Daria Kaleniuk made an emotional demand to British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, asking him to instruct NATO to enter the war in Ukraine. After the event was praised in the Western media, reports surfaced showing that Kaleniuk is not just a journalist, but a member of the World Economic Forum and runs initiatives that are backed by Soros throughout Eastern Europe. While many are skeptical of Russian President Vladimir Putin and his former ties to the KGB and the World Economic Forum, too, by the way, scrutiny on the side of the conflict seems absent in mainstream outlets, which has worried many considering the radical nature of the World Economic Forum and their Great Reset goals. And then they go into the Great Reset a little bit and all the people behind that, the social credit score and the shutdown and everything. And again, this ties right into what we'll talk about here in a bit when it comes to how this agenda now, because of this war, is perfectly tied into the energy shortages that are coming, right? The oil and gas, they wanted to phase that out for a long time. This is a perfect opportunity for them to do that. So we'll get to that in a moment, right? Let me see. So we did this one. And, you know, while we're at it, I guess we can show this. There's a new family tree that was out. If we're talking about someone like Klaus Schwab, right? At least they claim here. I'm not 100% this is accurate, right? A lot of people are very angry about World Economic Forum founder Klaus Schwab, I intend to ignore the World Economic Forum just as another think tank, but it's a mystery why so popular with big businesses and politicians. I'm noting down here something entirely unverifiable by me. I'm hoping publishing this will be pointed to the truth and whether there is any merit in this meme. Now they're going through here claiming that, I guess, Moritz Rothschild and Emma Rothschild, born Binge, had a child called Louis Rothschild, and he married Melanie Emmerich, later than marriage name Rothschild, and they had Marion Rothschild as a daughter, and she married Fred Schwab, which caused her to change her name to Schwab, Marion Schwab, and they are the parents of Klabby Anil Schwab. So that's the potentially correct family tree. I'm not sure, but make of that what you will. Always interesting to see. Now, Zelensky have done a number of big speeches here, appealing to the West, and like, oh, you know, all these emotional appeals and stuff. And please come join, and please come die, West, in this war against a nuclear war or whatever the hell they want to have at the end of this with Russia, right? Channeling Churchill, Ukraine leader vows, we will fight to the end, we'll fight on the beaches. Ukraine's President Zelensky, invoking the wartime defiance of British Prime Minister Winston Churchill, vowed Tuesday to fight to the end in a historic virtual speech to UK lawmakers. We will not give up and we will not lose, he said, giving a day-by-day account of Russia's invasion that dwelt on the cost of lives of civilians, including Ukrainian children. Yeah, that's why they're handing out weapons now to Ukrainian kids to go fight and die. We'll look at that in a moment. We will fight to the end, at sea, in the air. It's like you're plagiarizing Churchill here and thinking this is going to evoke some... Anyway. We will continue to fight for our land, whether the cost. Yeah, I'm sure you'll be dying on the front lines. I'm sure you won't be taken out of there when push comes to shove. No, of course, Ukrainians going to lay down their lives and die for this. We will fight in the forests, in the fields, on the shores, in the streets, he told a packed chamber, which greeted him with a standing ovation at the start and rose again at the end. The speech was a conscious echo of Churchill's landmark address to the House of Commons in June 1940, after British forces were forced to retreat from France in the face of Nazi German onslaught. We shall fight on the beaches, blah, blah, blah. You know the line, right? Again, he's an actor. He's like invoking this and tell the British this, and they're all emotionally. But yeah, let's go fight and die right now. Zelensky, wearing a green military T-shirt and sitting next to Ukraine's blue and yellow flag, also invoked William Shakespeare as he delivered the chamber's first ever virtual speech by a foreign leader. The question for us now is to be or not to be. Oh, my God. He said this in his 10-minute speech, which followed similar addresses to members of the U.S. Congress and the European Parliament. We have another one where he's talking to some people in America. Now I can give you a definitive answer. It is yes to be. Zelensky, while thanking Western countries for their retaliation against Russia, also noted NATO had failed to accede to his demands to impose a new no-fly zone over Ukraine. Yeah, how do you propose that that's supposed to happen without a full-on war between Russia and NATO? Appealing directly to Prime Minister Boris Johnson, he said, but please increase the pressure of sanctions against this country, and please recognize this country as a terrorist state, and please make sure that our skies are safe. Please make sure that you do what needs to be done and what is stipulated by the greatness of your country. In response, Johnson said he had never before in our centuries of parliamentary democracy has the House listened to such an address. He has moved the hearts of everybody in this House, Boris Johnson said, vowing that the West would press on with arms supplies to Ukraine and further sanctions after the US and UK announced a ban on Russian oil. Okay. So it gets better, of course. In charged call with U.S. Jewish leaders, Zelensky rails against Putin's pure Nazism. This is just a race to the bottom of, like, Nazi accusations. That's what this conflict has devolved into. Ukraine's president pleads with Conference of Presidents for help in getting world leaders to supply Kyiv with weapons and compares country's situation to Jews in Warsaw Ghetto. Ukrainian President Zelensky likened his beleaguered country to Jewish inhabitants of the Warsaw Ghetto during the Holocaust in an emotional call with Jewish leaders Monday, as Russian troops continue to press their deadly invasion. During the Zoom conversation with the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, Zelensky repeatedly compared Russian actions to those of the Nazis. From sieges to indiscriminate bombing campaigns, he also compared Putin's rhetoric against the Ukrainian people to that which was employed by chief Nazi propagandist Joseph Goebbels. "This is just pure Nazism," Zelensky said of Russian bombing attacks that have killed hundreds of civilians, according to unverified tallies. "Putin is just destroying the citizens of Ukraine in different of different nationalities. This is just pure Nazi behavior. I can't even qualify this in any different manner." The charge was pointedly aimed at dispelling Russia's claim that its military operation is an attempt to denazify Ukraine. So this is what we've been over and over now the last few shows here, but like it's just everybody is just, if you can out-Nazi accuse the other side, I guess you somehow have the moral high ground. And so that's why this is the only, it's basically the singular thing that's dominating the debate over this conflict is who's the bigger Nazi, right? Zelensky's call with the umbrella body, which represents 50 American Jewish groups, was aimed at convincing the organization to push world leaders to send more weapons to Ukraine to fend off the Russian attack. He went through the list of cities already run over by Russian forces and warned that the situation would only deteriorate further without more forceful global intervention. Let me see here. What do we have? Ultima Power says... I must correct you guys on the Weekend Warrior Show. Russia was founded by a Viking named Rurik in the city of Novgorod as the locals needed a king. Rurik sent his relative down south and it took created Kyiv as a raiding port. The Kievans have more Viking heritage than Slav, with the Russians having more Slav. So is there a... I mean, I know that... I know very well of the story. My son is named Rurik. I know obviously about the story very, very well. The question is how much, genetic imprint was left from that. We're talking, at the time of very few. Not all of Scandinavia, poured into Kyiv at that time. I mean, Kyiv is really the heart of the Rus, the people, right? But I assume you're referring to can you do a DNA test and see the differences of Ukrainian versus Russian, at least the Western Russian. If you go far east, then of course they look more, there's Chinese admixture and all kinds of things, right? And Russia has this federation going, so they're very multicultural. We played a clip with Putin talking about how, he's so proud of all the multicultural ethnic groups in Russia and all that stuff. But the question is how much the genetic signature is, I guess, right? You have a similar thing in like the UK, in England, right? Where you have some forces that came in, but they're even like the Romans, right? They came in, they dominated for a long time, but apparently there's very little genetic, it's not the right word here, residue, but like traces of them, right? The Angles and the Saxons, on the other hand, that's a big difference, right? I would assume even the Danes later, maybe the Normans later as well. That's a huge genetic imprint, on England. But no, I mean, obviously, I know about that story very, very well, right? But that's what I like to see. I like to see what's the difference, basically, right? If you talk about Western Russia and Ukrainians, as far as I understand, they're more or less the same people. I would assume that the people who settled in Kyiv and they intermixed with Slavs, the Scandinavians I'm talking about, that would be somewhat of an even distributed distribution over the general area of, if you include Ukraine and Western Russia, I would assume, but I could be wrong on that. I could be wrong. All right. Anyway, so it's all about calling the other side Nazis, as we've learned now over and over again. And it's all, for some reason, about appealing to U.S. Jewish leaders to get them to push on other countries. And I would assume, and maybe then in the extension, NATO, and get everybody involved in this conflict and this fight and basically start another world war, right? In fact, I have a clip here of Zelensky talking about how no other nation has endured this for the last 70 years. Again, given the echoes of the Putin is a Hitler, basically. Here we go.
We are defending ourselves for 12 days now. We never wanted this war, but this war was brought to us. We never wanted to kill anyone, but we have to fight back to get the enemy out from our land and our life. We have to tolerate what a single nation in Europe didn't have to tolerate for the last 70 years. It's just terror actions. They keep Bucha, Hostomel, and other little towns.
I'm sorry, is he speaking Hebrew here?
And villages seized temporarily until...
No, he's not. the English was dubbed so strongly over it, I couldn't hear. I don't think he is.
They get punished, and they will get punished, because our armed forces know how to fight back. This enemy is demoralized by what they found in Ukraine. We always wanted peace. How many more deaths need to happen? What's the difference between peaceful people in Kharkiv or people in Hamburg? You need to give us support. You need to give us planes so that we get stronger to fight. This is the assistance that needs to be given, not just to Ukraine, but to the whole world, to bring victory so that humanity can win.
So that humanity can win. The other side got no humanity. Isn't that what they said in the, was it Inglourious Basterds or something like that, right? All right. So, you know, you have the Wagner group then on one side, right? And they're funding, they're Nazis. And then you have Kolomoisky, who's Jewish, who's funding Azov, and, you know, the blah, 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 back and forth, right? But it is true that, you know what? Before we play this, listen to this. I forgot about this clip. This is brilliant. Here's Chuck Schumer. What's happening is another Holocaust. Listen to this.
There's a Holocaust going on. When you see that people are lined up on buses to just leave a conflict zone and Putin's artillery shells those buses, that is just below humanity, below dignity. We also need to give the brave Ukrainian fighting forces, who are doing much better than anyone ever imagined, the arms they need, whether it be javelins or stingers or anything else. They need these arms simply to defend themselves against brutal Russian aggression.
It's funny how these people who never will be on the front lines of any battle ever is calling for arming the other side because, again, it's beneficial to their overall agenda, right? I just find that interesting how that always works out. Oh, you need to go die. See, all the Ukrainians need to go die. Here's more weapons. Pick them up and fight with the one pesky country that we don't kind of not 100% have lined up with our agenda. Maybe they're like, I don't know. Considering the Belt and Road Initiative, Russia is like what, 80% there, I'd say, something like that. And maybe there's some petty disagreements. Basically, it's not 100% their guy. There's a couple of things where they kind of haven't been able to control them in the country. So that's why this is happening. But anyway, back to the point of saying there is a faction then of kind of left wing sources which are generally more honest than the mainstream, but they still fall short. And this is the example I would point you to that. Like the gray zone, right? This is Max Blumenthal and stuff, and he's done some good comments, right? But here's Alexander Rubinstein and Max Blumenthal, and we're not going to go through the entire piece. But it's about how Ukraine's Jewish president Zelensky made peace with neo-Nazis paramilitaries on front lines of war with Russia. And essentially, to boil it down, the poor Jewish Zelensky is just being used by these Nazi forces. That's what the other side is claiming. They're claiming that because Azov exists, right, and they fight for their objectives and their goals, their agendas and stuff, right? And again, I reiterate, I think they're being used as just a meat shield, essentially. And I think, unfortunately, some of them are foolish enough to go along with this, because why in the world would they line up with Zelensky and Nuland? If these are so supposed neo-Nazis, why would they go and fight for, you know, Zionist globalist forces? It's beyond me. Look, I don't understand the allegiance or what the deal here is, but it's beyond me. Maybe one side think they're going to just outmaneuver the other guy at the end and they'll truly gain power, or maybe they will separate later. Look, I don't know. I don't claim to understand the psychology of why there's this alignment and agreement, but I remember reflecting on the very same thing when Victoria Nuland was there meddling back in 2014 and they did their coup in Ukraine, right? Western forces. Like, huh, interesting. Like, they're hunting so-called neo-Nazis in the West. Everybody's a Nazi and everybody who disagrees is a Nazi. But then they line up and they fund and they arm and they support and they cover for them, which is fascinating. And again, I think it's just because they're using them as a meat shield. And eventually, at the end, they are going to target them too. That's what I think. But they're having this spin on it that it's basically, he's being used by National Socialist in Ukraine. NATO is not the powerful guy here. The Western forces are not the powerful guy. The U.S. State Department is not the more powerful entity. It's this kind of, you know, it's not tiny. I'm not saying it's completely fringe and out there. But relatively, I think what Ukraine has a, if we look at some of the stats, an army of what, I think I've read somewhere like 1.2 million people or something. I think that includes reserves and like as maximum many they can muster up or whatever, right? And I've read somewhere that Azov is, what, 10,000? Apparently they've grown. And maybe there's understandable reasons for that and incentives and all kinds of things, right? But it's fascinating how they're trying the gray zone and some of these other outlets, which, again, they're slightly more honest because they're at least recognizing the Western press and Western media is completely looking the other way and pretending that this group is not even in existence, basically. And if they even recognize, it's fine, don't worry about it, you know. We need to use these people as a meat shield for our objectives. So let's not talk about them, right? So somehow it's Azov's. They outmaneuvered poor Zelensky, and he doesn't know what he's doing. That's kind of like that. Is that the take you're gonna get? You're gonna get on this, right? And so some people were pointing out, and again, it's fascinating. I think it's they have a sonarad on their garb, right, and stuff, and it's like good for them, based, right? good for them. But so NATO, the official NATO account were posting these pictures, which is hilarious when you think about it, right? Just the dynamic here, right? So someone zoomed in on this one picture, and of all things, it was on International Women's Day that they linked this up, right? And apparently, so here's the original tweet, right, from NATO. And they clicked into the top image, and there's the woman, right? Oh, what did they say again, NATO? They said, all women and girls must live free and equal. This International Women's Day, we think of the remarkable women of Ukraine. Their strength, bravery, and resilience are symbolic of the spirit of their nation, right? Because NATO have been so pro all the different nations that they're supposed to represent. There's no, you know, all the stay behind armies and stuff, like they've been undermining European nationalism for forever, right? So I'm not squeamish, obviously, like, oh, cool, they have a black sun. Cool, that's based, good for them, right? But then they got some pushback, NATO, on this, and so then, of course, they ended up deleting their tweet. Where's the original one? Yeah, here it is right here. That's, I don't think you can see the address there, but that's the official NATO account. It doesn't exist. Try searching for something else, right? And here's another one, fascinating too. And here's Alan McLeod. I think he's, Mint Press News. I think this is, what is she called again? Oh, jeez. Anyway. So I don't care if this guy has a picture of Stefan Bandera behind him, but when the hell would you see PBS of all outlets being okay with someone who has a picture of a National Socialist leader behind them. Like, it's incredible that they're just looking the other way for this, right? You think. But what makes it worse is that they're blurring it out, which means that they know about it, right? PBS NewsHour, and again, I don't care about this. It's fine, whatever the hell. You know, stand with whoever the hell you want to stand with. It's not that. PBS NewsHour interviews mayor of Konotop, Artem Semenakin, presenting him as a hero for killing Russian invaders. However, despite his zoom blur effect, you can clearly see that behind him is a portrait of Stefan Bandera, right? So let's check this out a little bit.
Do you fear that they'll come back? And
PBS, guys, PBS.
And either occupy or try and destroy the city.
Why are they blurring this out? If this is not a problem, why are you blurring the background out?
Yes, of course we are concerned, and this concern is not groundless. There's a big unit near our town, and using the weapons they have, they could destroy our town. But we are not afraid. We are ready to fight till the end.
Yeah, Leroy Dumont says that in the Dumont in the Odyssey chat. Stefan Bandera aligned with the Nazis because they were the ones fighting the Soviet Union, which genocided 20 million Ukrainians. Exactly, right. This is not hard. This is not rocket science. They sided with these guys because they were seeing the National Socialists as literally as liberators at the time, right? But again, it's not really the discussion here. It's not about a historical why you aligned with one side. The noteworthy thing is the absolute disgusting dishonesty of the Western press and outlets like PBS, who are faking shieldings, blurring out certain inconveniences as they try to make out people, turn them into heroes, where they are three decades just shrieking about Nazism and anything nationalistic in the West, right? That's why this is fascinating.
To defeat these Russian cockroaches.
After the Russians left, he rallied his troops, civilians, ready to resist.
All of our cities are like this. All of our Ukraine is like this. We have weapons in our hands, we have armed up, and we are ready to kill occupiers.
Oh, there, say that. The concerned posting face of the lefty interviewing this guy here. Look at that. They even screwed up right there one frame. They can't even do it right. We got to show the weapon. Wow, that's cool. Isn't that cool?
To kill.
Wow. And again, I'm not going to. I know Nazi is a slur, you know, all these things, right? And they use it today. But I don't know. It's fascinating. It's definitely fascinating. And of course, then you have, this little tidbit here, and we've shown this now a couple of times. But again, just to remind you guys that you have Kolomoisky, right? Here's the guy who supposedly funded Azov to begin with, and that's this guy right here. That's Ihor Kolomoisky. Had lavishly funded the right-wing sector battalion and at one point flirted with the ultra-nationalist Svoboda Party. I remember that. Svoboda Party went up and lined up with the president, I think, back in 2000. Was that 14 or was that earlier? I think it might have been 14. And there was this famous picture of one of the guys from the Svoboda, I forget his name now, from the Svoboda Party next to this other Jewish guy who was elected, I think, prime minister, I think, of Ukraine at the time. It continues here. This is from Tablet Magazine talking about this, right? And was even rumored to be involved with the neo-Nazi Azov Battalion, making an Israeli citizen perhaps the primary purveyor of the ultra-right wing in Ukraine. He sparked a national debate about the feudalization rather than federalization of the country, which his aligning of the volunteer military battalions widely considered to be out of control, right? So these are the people behind these so-called Nazi forces in Ukraine. Here's the original story if you want to check it out and read more for yourself. Ukrainian Jewish oligarchs steps aside for now. Yeah, for now. This is back in 2015 after the main coup, but he funded them. I forget what the tune was, like, definitely millions, right? So how does this work? How do you parse this, right? Let me see what else we had here. Oh, this is kind of interesting too. Here's Anderson Cooper. I'm going to go skip forward a bit here. Just casually, this again, Western press here, casually like talking about, you know, Molotov cocktails and how do we kill as many as possible. And I don't know, it's just this unscrupulous reporting here. I'm going to go forward to like about 1:30 in this clip. Anderson Cooper visits with Ukrainian about Putin dickhead beer and Molotov cocktails. Let me go forward to about, I think about 1:30 should be good. Let's check this out.
And you would see...
Wait, the beer is called Putin Dickhead?
Yeah.
How long have you been making Putin Dickhead
it's
beer?
It's actually, we started to brew this beer in 2015 because in 2014, the Russians came to Crimea and Peninsula and got it and in eastern regions. So this label has a history already, so...
Wow.
Yeah, but you see normally...
that's quite the image.
It's a primitive weapon, but potentially deadly. These Molotov cocktails also have additional materials in them to ensure the fire will stick to whatever it's thrown at.
Petrol alone isn't good enough. You want something to make it sticky so that it sticks on a person.
Yeah, on a surface.
When we got here to the factory, there was a group of maybe 70 or so men who were all standing around a car.
Men, Anderson. A bunch of men. They were just standing around. A bunch of men were standing around.
And there was somebody in a uniform, Ukrainian in a uniform, who was explaining to them how to throw a Molotov cocktail inside a vehicle to the best effect. There's a lot of people here who are trying to get as much training as they can in order to be able to face Russian forces if and when they come.
I think that's it from that, but you get the idea. And we show the BBC correspondent the other day, who's like show maps and stuff of like, yeah, civilians, go and put yourself in front of Russian tank columns and sacrifice yourself. Line up here, and here's how you can throw water balloons with paint on Russian tanks. Like you're going to die. Like you're killing people with this shit and dumb things. In fact, it gets worse. Check this out. And people have they've talked about, what was it, the latest thing now was they were showing, POWs, right, and stuff, which is like an actual like breach of the Geneva Convention. This is like a war crime. It's something to that effect, right? And again, the Western press are happy to do this, just showing faces out there of people that have been taken by the other side and stuff, right? Photos: children learn how to use AK-47 assault rifles during a civilian self-defense course in the outskirts of Lviv, Western Ukraine, March 4th, 2022. Apparently, these photos is from the AFP. So, child soldiers is now what they're showing on Western mainstream press, right? I mean, are you really doing this? This is what you're choosing to do in your fight against Russia and Putin? And again, anybody who's pro-Ukrainian here, and I am literally pro-Ukrainian. I don't want to see Ukrainians die. I don't want to see anybody injured in this fight over these, you know, elites at the top. How can you look at this and just like, yeah, this is fine. This is all right. Let's hand out AK-47s to these kids and have them line up and just die for the sake of this war, right? This is despicable. Absolutely disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. I can't believe it. And look at this. Here's another example of this, right? Here's the pick the side, right? Here's Richard Spencer here. Across the Western media, a new traitorous coalition has emerged in support of Russia. Dirtbag leftists, I'm not sure how many of those are, dude, and rightist America First Groypers Q holdouts, LARPing traditionalist ultra-MAGAists, literal commies, and the occasional neo-reactionary and paleoconservative. The traitors coalition roughly tracks with those who either enthusiastically endorsed or apologized for January 6th. Some fellow travelers in this coalition, notably Trump himself and Tucker Carlson, have already backtracked and reversed their positions. And this is what he had to say here. Listen to this here.
Won't name names here, but the I think it's amazing this pro Putin, pro Russia stuff when there is a.
You remember what you used to be, Richard? You remember that just a couple of years ago? You guys remember? I was trying to find let's play the clip first, and I'll talk about it after.
I mean, yes, the Fed.
Ukraine is not a real country. It was all this crap of like the Holodomor didn't even see. He was like fighting me on Twitter. Like this is a few years ago now, like 2000, probably like 4, 15, 16, maybe or something. Oh, that didn't happen. It wasn't intentional. Russia's the greatest thing ever. Listen to this now.
We have a super chat on this, actually. It said
the feds are going to take note of that, but ethically speaking...
The feds are going to take note of that. Is that mean? Are you talking about yourself?
People who do that are fucking traitors.
Well, I think it's...
Traitors to whom? Traitors to what? the Western gay NATO powers? Victoria Nuland? Who are you talking about here? Who's these great people that are standing up for us in the West and I guess Americans and Europeans then? Who are these great leaders who are running the show? The EU? It's like a dumb EU flag in his profile.
Important to have discourse about why Putin did what he did and how the American management of the situation created the scenario.
Interesting.
Well, the super check kind of related to this from Warren says, this week, again on Twitter Spaces, Richard said the dissident right spate of unpalatable takes is the product of his thought leaders being on Russia's payroll. Purely as a thought experiment, does Richard think Keith or Joel fit the profile of this particular type of shill in any way?
No. I mean, I think they were wanting to get some hot takes there. No, I can find plenty of examples of dissident right thought leaders openly supporting the destruction of the U.S. empire and NATO and openly more than sympathizing with Russia. Those people are fucking traitors.
So the U.S. empire now is the greatest, is our greatest ally. Fascinating. So the Victoria Nulands, the John Kerrys, the Joe Biden, in the extension, then Trump too, right? The American empire. Gotta back them up here. Amazing.
Period. Putin does not have the best interest of the white race at heart at all.
So the EU definitely does, though. The other side, the Zelensky side, definitely they have definitely the best interest at heart. It's definitely for white people. Is Zelensky and his cohorts and all the global homos who've been undermining Europe and Western man for decades. But let's not pretend they have not been trying to replace us. If you're against them now, you're a traitor. In fact, NATO is the greatest thing ever. And if you don't obey, if you don't submit, if you don't back the NATO side, well, the feds will take note.
And sympathizing with him is wrong.
Warren said, given that a contingent of dissident right thought leaders are effectively endorsing defecting to Russia and China, does Richard think it's more accurate to classify this contingent as nationalists or Eurasian imperialists?
Yeah,
they're very
that's literally what Spencer was. Remember all the shit about Dugin, the Duginism and all that stuff. That just went out the window like in 2 seconds. It's like this flip flopper shit, right? Here, let me just remind you for a second about the other side. Here's the great force responsible for the whole thing, right? We've talked about intense escalation from NATO, the continuous antagonistic relationship and like the pushing and got more countries into its wings and getting closer and closer to Russia, right? Here's arming things. They're sending planes to Romania now. They're sending U.S. troops, all this stuff there, right? This is the other side then, Spencer, that's, are they standing up for the white race? Listen, check this. This is the side that you have to be pro, otherwise... you're a traitor.
At NATO,
diversity
is our strength.
For the white race, TM.
Nous parlons une multitude de langues.
Nous possédons des talents différents.
Our own unique personalities. We come from all over the world.
From every walk of life.
No two of us
are the same.
That's just amazing.
We work together.
No one is the same, and therefore let's replace the white people in Europe. We work together.
Respect our needs.
Embrace our differences.
Because we all have one thing in common.
We are NATO.
God, I got to tell Stoltenberg. God, I fucking hate Stoltenberg. Jens Stoltenberg is such... look, I'm not going to say it. Isn't this amazing? this is what the web, this is the side that you're a traitor to if you're not pro what they're doing and they're meddling and stuff, right? Yeah, I'm sure they'll look out for Ukraine at the end. That's why Zelensky, you know, we've played it before, but let's have a reminder. Let's play it again. Then this is the great side here of those who are, you know, standing up, I guess, for what Western values or whatever, like the white race. Is that what this is going to lead to? Here we go. Here's Zelensky right here. Check this out. All right, you get the idea. So if you're not pro that side, then you're a traitor, right? You got to be pro that. Otherwise, you're pro Putin. It's like, I don't know what it is with these retards who always, they only know a rock and a hard place. And they try to pretend that, like, well, the Hegelian dialectic being stuck between two false options is the only way that you can, that's the only only existence that there is, right? You can't be against both sides and think it's dumb and say, well, clearly someone up there is killing us. And also all the things that's going to come in the wake of this conflict, right? The energy crisis, the supply chain issues, the fertilizer shortage, the food shortages. Now there's export issues, the wheat issues. All of it plays into the Great Reset, Agenda 2030. It's all a big plan. And maybe it wasn't every single step of this was planned along the way, but oh my, is it a beneficial conflict to have, because it ties right into the very things that they've been trying to push on us since the pandemic. But again, this guy lines up and takes his booster shots at this point. He's too dumb to criticize someone like Rochelle Walensky or, like, you know, the heads of Pfizer or the heads of Moderna, right? All these people that we've been exposing over the last year and a half since the vax was out. Such a simple little thing. Albert Bourla, Stefan Bancel. Who are these people? What's their allegiance? You know, oh, there can't be a traitor, right? And someone pointed out here too, like just a year or 2 years ago, we had like there was the Iranian thing with the Iranian flags in the name and all the shit. It's just a big flip flopper. But this is what you get on the other side. This is what they think. It's incredible. Here's Biden, by the way. Let me switch over to this real quick. Here's Biden. And I'm not trying to say that he's cognizant enough to remember any of this at this point. He's basically like he's like, what, he wears diapers now, essentially, right? This is Spencer's boy here, by the way, too. Biden, right? Listen to what he said about this expansion, specifically into the Baltic. And what has happened? Well, we have now NATO forces amassing. There was a meeting recently. And if you go to like NATO's Twitter page and stuff, it's just over and over and over again. It's just like amassing troops. It's like just antagonistic at every point. This, they claim, is a defensive allegiance, right? We just gathered, we're backing the countries that are members, and we're not an aggressor. We're just a defensive unit and stuff like that. And then at every point along the way, they've done things to intentionally antagonize. And again, using the Ukrainian people against Russia because of their own Atlanticist agenda and purposes, right? So they've amassing troops now in Romania. They're building up in Latvia, Lithuania, I think it is as well. And they had a meeting recently in Latvia. They were talking about all these things. Journalists they have a press conference there, and they're just like, "Will you go to war with if 1 inch of NATO territory is occupied? Will you go to nuclear war with Russia?" They basically said, and Stoltenberg was just like, "Oh well, we're a defensive organization." And it's like, well, you've existed for 70 years or something like that. And patently now you've failed because through your actions, you've actually caused a nation to invade another. Anyway, listen to what Biden, Spencer's boy here, had to say about this.
I think the one place where the greatest consternation would be caused in the short term for admission, having nothing to do with the merit and preparedness of the country to come in, would be to admit the Baltic states now in terms of NATO-Russian, U.S.-Russian relations.
Yep.
And if there was ever anything that was going to tip the balance, were it to be tipped in terms of a vigorous and hostile reaction, I don't mean military, in Russia, it would be that. So the way I look at the calculus here...
All right, and it cuts off right there. So, again, I'm not saying he's cognizant enough to remember any of this. I don't think he is. I think, frankly, his brain is not there. But whatever. This is what they used to say, right? And what happened? Well, more and more expansion of NATO. And said, oh, we're just defensive, but we're just getting closer and closer to the border of Russia. And what are they supposed to do? They're literally painting them into a corner intentionally. This could have been completely avoided, but it's irresponsible people at the very top that created this scenario, and they need to be held responsible and liable for this. So anyway, so this is the next level to this of what's happening next. And again, this is what I was talking about. This plays into Agenda 2030 and the Great Reset. But of course, those are just crazy conspiracy. World Economic Forum is not really that important in the scope of things. No, of course not. It's just an open conspiracy, and therefore it's not a good, then it's just a conspiracy theory because, well, they have meetings about it and talk about it. There's nothing secret about this. Yeah, but they're doing all the things that they're talking about. Look at the Agenda 2030, the sustainable goals. Look at that, and look at what that is. Look about the replacement, like 12 or at least 10 of, 24, I think, or something like that, like points that they have. That's what that logo is about. There's sustainable goals. They have like all these multicolored little tic-tacs around a circle, right? I think at least 10 of them is about what they called regular and orderly migration, right? That they're seeing the replacement agenda as a vital part of this, right? And so the next level to this, of course, is you have to grind civilization to a halt. It's called absolute zero. We've talked about that many, many times, right? And here's a reminder. Here's the document. Everything needs to come to a complete standstill. We used to talk about climate lockdowns and stuff. And ironically, this conflict out of this conflict, Ukraine-Russia, you're going to get a potential standstill, right? Here's the detailed map in the document. We've showed this many times, but they want to bring things to a point of absolute zero by 2050. I'm not sure how they're going to pull this off, but if they have enough famine, enough war, and enough supply chain issues, I guess that's the outcome of it. Nothing else is going to happen, right? But so a big portion of this is we got to choke out oil and gas. We got to have carbon neutrals, carbon zero. What are you going to replace it with? Don't worry about that. We'll figure that out later. So Biden here said, today I'm announcing that the United States is targeting a main artery of Russia's economy. We're banning all imports of Russian oil and gas. This is what he had to say about that.
Today I'm announcing the United States is targeting the main artery of Russia's economy. We're banning all imports of Russian oil and gas and energy. That means Russian oil will no longer be acceptable at U.S. ports, and the American people will deal another powerful blow to Putin's war machine.
Yeah, who else is going to have a power? Who else is this going to be a powerful blow against?
The decision today is not without cost here at home. Putin's war is already hurting American families at the gas pump. Since Putin began his military buildup on Ukrainian borders, just since then, the price of the gas at the pump in America went up 75 cents. And with this action, it's going to go up further. I'm going to do everything I can to minimize Putin's price hike here at home. In coordination with our partners, we've already announced that we're releasing 60 million barrels of oil from our joint oil reserves. Half of that, 30 million, is coming from the United States. And we're taking steps to ensure the reliable supply of global energy. We're also going to keep working with every tool at our disposal to protect American families.
Of course you are. Remember when he said this a while ago? This is aged very well here. It's hard to believe that this has to be said, but unlike this president, speaking about Trump, I'll do my job and take responsibility. I won't blame others, and I'll never forget that the job isn't about me. It's about you. Okay, well, who does he blame for the gas and oil price hikes here now?
It's going to go up. Can't do much right now. Russia's responsible.
Yep, there you go. Did you hear that? Can't do much about that right now. Russia is responsible. But wait a minute. I thought you were talking about how you're going to take responsibility, right? All right. So you're gonna open up the Keystone pipeline, right? You're gonna do that. It was a Keystone XL or what is it called? You're gonna increase output and production of gas and oil? No, no. Instead, you're gonna go crawling to other countries. Can you please produce more and let more out there so we don't have to have such high prices? No, they're not going to do that because why? They don't want any fixes. This is not an accidental, coincidental, unfortunate side effect of the Ukraine-Russia conflict. This is a desired outcome. And in fact, even his energy secretary talked about this. This is, I think, about a month back or 2 months back, where the then increasing prices, now it's just out of control. It's skyrocketing. It's insane. Back then, it's like, well, we want to go away from that anyway. We want to just transition over to other things. Well, what are you going to replace it with? This is what the Energy Secretary, Jennifer Granholm, had to say about it.
But the bottom line is that this president and this administration are looking at every single tool to shield American families from the impact of rising energy prices. And we're working through an energy transition. And we've got to start by adding energy. And the reality is we have to take some time to get off of oil and gas. We recognize this. This is a transition.
We have to get off oil and gas. This is a transition. Okay, well, what are you going to transit to? What are you going to do? Wind power? Is that what you're going to do? Well, do you know how much petrochemicals it takes to produce those things? That they're ugly, they're horrible for the environment. It looks like some kind of alien pod thing, right? Look, I wish there was some, you know, magnificent option here and something different. And look, maybe nuclear is the option. I mean, there's some people talking. What is Europe going to do now? Do you understand the price hikes here? Do you understand that, like, people are going to... I mean, luckily, we're heading into spring now in the Western Hemisphere. Come winter, next winter, unless this is resolved or sorted out in some way, you'll have Europeans, they're going to freeze to death because they won't be able to pay their heating costs, right? I mean, skyrocketing prices. Do you think this is an accident? Oh, well, that's very unfortunate, but we can't do anything about this, right? In fact, here he is back in 2019 on the campaign trail, talking about how basically he's going to phase out fossil fuels. Joe Biden here, back to Joe Biden now. Listen to this. It's a bit loud in the music at the beginning, but you can hear it. It quiets down. Listen to this.
One, I wanted to really thank you for all the work you put into your climate plan. Thank you. And two, I wanted to ask, are you ready to commit to the responsible phase out of fossil fuel production?
Are you ready to commit to the responsible phasing out of fuel production? Yes.
Part of your administration.
Well, look, we got to go to zero emissions, man.
Zero emissions.
Zero emissions.
We got to go to zero emissions.
And we can. It's within our wheelhouse. And the answer is yes.
The answer is yes. And so that means the responsible phase out of fossil fuel production in this country.
Have you had a chance to see my plan?
I have.
Take a look at it.
And I really appreciate that. And we want to get you higher up there.
By the way, only 15% of the pollution we produce. We got it. Something that can lead the damn world.
Well,
and get everybody back to the game.
Well, sir, that's a fantastic
and that's
point.
What I can do better than anybody.
And are you ready to ban fossil fuel exports as part of the administration?
Yes, absolutely. But we got to phase it. You got to call my office.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, he'll pick right up. Just call his office. He'll just, hi, this is Joe. Do you want to talk about phasing out of oil and gas? Sure. Let me get an ice cream. My butt's been wiped. I think that you can also now then add imports on that list, too. You're going to ban exports. Okay, good, right? But we got to also ban imports. How about that? That's really going to make it sting in average people's pocketbook, basically, right? Now, there was a great video, actually. This is, what, Twitchy here, the source. And it was a video right under, this is a transition, Biden's Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm basically tells Americans to suck it up over high gas prices. And now they haven't linked it up. I guess they had some randomizer here. It was basically the same thing, but it was Kamala Harris. I've refreshed it a couple of times to see if I can find the source again, but unfortunately I couldn't. I had it on my other computer earlier. I should have saved it down right away. Some of them don't allow you to do that easily, though. But anyway, the point, the gist of it is, we don't have to be long-winded about that. The gist of it is, she's talking about how basically you're not going to own a car, right? Remember, they have the kill switch coming up in 2027 in cars, automobiles. You can just kill them if you, you know, for whatever reason. You haven't obeyed, your social credit score is off. Well, that, boom, that's it. You can't drive anymore, right? They're, and they did this, as, I remember this in Sweden back like, you know, 10, 15 years ago, right? They started raising the taxes on the gas incrementally, and now it's like astronomically high, right? And they were building out all the bus networks and all the trains and all that kind of stuff, right? And it's like, okay, it's sure, great if you're living like in the city or some megapolis somewhere, like, okay, good for you. You don't need a car or whatever. But what do you think it's going to do with the people living on the countryside that don't want to live in pods in the big city with their metaverse headsets on and eating their bug protein all the time? Well, there's still people who want to be living out on the countryside that want to, maybe they want to have some cattle, maybe they want to grow some food or something. No, that's over. That's part of the whole Agenda 2030 thing, right? Sustainable development, drive people off of their land, prevent them from being able to grow food, live out remotely, and part of that gig, part of achieving that, is to make it just too costly. Not for the mega wealthy, of course. They'll have their paradise, living on their islands and their yachts and all kinds of shit, right? But for normal, regular people, small scale farmers, homesteaders, and so forth, make it so so costly for you to like to drive, to drive back and forth, to have diesel in your tractor or whatever you have, right? What are you going to have? An electrical tractor? Is that what you're going to have? How are you going to power this? What's the energy? Where's the energy going to come from, right? Are they going to expand the new? No, they're decommissioning nuclear power plants. That's what's happening. That's what you have to understand, this absolute zero chart that I'm showing. That's where they want us. Drag us into complete bottom, standstill of civilization, having nothing to replace. Look, if they had some magnificent replacement and stuff and like clean or whatever, some clean energy, some Tesla technology or whatever, fucking great. Like, sure, dude, wheel it out. I'm not gonna complain on that. But that's not what's happening here. There's nothing to replace it. People are going to starve. People are going to freeze to death if this continues. This is absolute lunacy. Bill Hoover says, you see what they're setting up. Basically, if you complain about how shitty of a job the Biden administration is doing with the economy, you are now unpatriotic. This will be shoved down our throats for the next year. The gas situation was fucked before this fabricated conflict. Yeah, it was. It was bad enough then. What's going to happen now? Seven bucks a gallon? What is it? Did I have that tweet? I had a... let me see if I had that. Here's one. Here's an example, right, of someone's talking about... I live in Georgia, not the one where the same people who are did a coup in Ukraine did a coup in that country. I'm not that Georgia, right? The Rose Revolution. You guys remember that? Oh, CIA, they're so great. They're just totally on our side. If you don't back them in NATO, you're a traitor. Anyway, I live in Georgia. I make $7.49 an hour. I just paid $4.52 for a gallon. For a 16-gallon tank, that's $72.34 to fill up my tank. That is more than an entire day's work. Don't tell me to get a better job, because that's beside the point. Your first world economy is failing when any of your full-time working citizens have to surrender more than a day's wage just for transportation, not to mention because of inflation, 10% of the money I make vanishes. Anyways, I'm not just demoralized, I'm fucking panicking. I guess it's on... And on over on, is that poll or something, right? 4chan, 8chan, or whatever they're called. Think this is going to affect any of the people out there? No, of course not. Of course it's not, right? Let me see if this was the clip. I want to play. I think they have the same clip. Yeah, let me go forward here. I want to play from about 3:44 here of stuff that's getting banned. This is kind of an interesting discussion here, too. So it's not just oil and gas that's going down the pipeline, right, and down the toilet. A lot of other things are being banned, essentially. Russia is being, it's an entire country being depersoned, right? Look at this here.
Ukrainian soldier has what they need to fight. War drags on.
And you know, we mentioned earlier that President Biden banned oil and gas imports from Russia. Tell us what exactly that does. What does that mean? And how is this move being seen in Europe?
Yeah, the president has banned all energy imports, so not only gas and oil, but coal, too. And this makes up about 8% of the energy consumed by the United States. But it's a blow against Moscow's main source of income. Russia's energy sector makes up a majority of the country's economy. The president said many Americans will see prices go up, adding, though, that defending democracy comes at a cost. But Washington is trying to ease the
democracy, yeah, because it's so great what we've seen in the West over the last few decades. It's just we're so fortunate to have this democracy, aren't we?
Diplomats went to Venezuela to discuss getting that country's oil on the international market. The White House is looking for help from Gulf countries. And there's also Iran. Talks have progressed regarding the country's nuclear program, and their oil could be another source of energy. But on the other side, European nations have been more hesitant when it comes to banning Russian oil and gas, mainly because the continent gets about 40% of their gas from Russia. The White House says it doesn't expect, nor does it think that European allies are going to follow its example. Despite that, though, there is a shift in European capitals to move away from relying on Moscow.
What sources do you have? What other options do you have? Like it or not, but you'll have to work together with this country, at least for now. If Europe wasn't so dumb, and again, this is completely intentional, it's not an accident or whatever, right? But to do away with all the nuclear, Sweden did this recently, they're decommissioning in Germany, they're decommissioning in France. I think, weirdly enough, France was I guess they were panicking or something, right? Maybe Eric Zemmour will get in next or something. We'll see what happens. Maybe he's good, maybe he's not. We'll see, but Macron was like, "Oh, we need to build nuclear power plants." Yeah, is it ideal? No, but what the hell are you going to do, right? If you're not going to deal with Russia and oil and gas from them, where are you going to get your energy from? Oh, renewables? You're going to build? You're going to be solar power plants, wind plants? Do you know how much petrochemicals goes into producing that? And furthermore, how are you going to store it? There's not enough accumulators, just the if you're using lithium ion batteries to store, it's like toxic process to produce it. They don't have any options. But anyway, listen to what he says about all the other stuff that's being banned in Russia. It's like, oh no, please not. Don't ban McDonald's and Coca-Cola and Netflix and Hollywood movies and Pornhub. Please don't.
It just, Ben, isn't going to be quick.
We're also seeing several large corporations moving away from them as well. They've stopped operating in Russia. This includes McDonald's, Starbucks, Apple. Is this kind of thing symbolic, or will this actually have a real impact on the country?
Yeah, this, I think, will have a real impact on the country. Let's take McDonald's, for example. It has 850 restaurants in Russia.
Look at that list right there. That's a big shame right there. I can't believe that. What are you going to do? I wouldn't want to be in those Russians' shoes right now.
Employing 62,000 people. That's just one company. Now add on top of that the dozens of other companies that are pulling their businesses, and you can see how this could create
Netflix, Universal, Disney Plus. Like, oh no, please don't. The latest Frozen movie, we just have to have it for our kids.
Create a headache for the Kremlin. But there are other areas where this will have an impact. As I mentioned earlier, oil and gas are big business for Russia. We've seen large companies like BP, Exxon, and Shell pull their investments. Boeing and Airbus will stop supplying parts to Russian airlines, so that will potentially have an impact on flights. Then you have just the pleasures of everyday life, like Disney and Netflix, who are suspending their services. Nike and Adidas are closing their stores.
Oh, no, not Nike. Oh, my God. No. We got to have their... What was it? Let me see if I can find. Do I have that? I just thought of it. Maybe I don't have that. Anyway, the you get the point, right? Yeah, I don't think I have that. It was this funny Nike. I think it was a Nike ad of like. All right. Anyway, that it doesn't make sense. You don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, so someone showed this little. Where'd it go? Did I lose it? No, here we go. Here we go. This is a good one right here. Russia, after 3 months of no Facebook, no TikTok, no McDonald's, no Coca-Cola, and no porn. It's a damn shame. Now, you know, we'll see what happens here, right? But obviously they're doing things to inflict maximum pain on Russians that don't have anything to do with this. Maybe they didn't vote for Putin or whatever. And furthermore, I thought the West were claiming that he was an autocrat and there's not fair elections and he's just this autocratic dictator that's put himself in this position. Well, why are you punishing just Russian citizens then, right? This doesn't make sense in any regard. Bill Hoover again over on Entropy says, remember when Trump wanted to put tariffs on China to boost manufacturing in the U.S.? Everyone in the establishment was going crazy because he did that, basically because it hurt their interest. Now we have to be patriotic so Hunter Biden's gas company can get some no-bid contracts. Yeah, that's right. And then eventually, I mean, no matter how you twist and turn this, it looks like you're going to be you're going to have to start doing more local production. Like Europe will have to do it. America will have to do it. And look, that's not a bad thing, I think, ultimately, to bring back manufacturing and stuff. That's a great idea. This globalization process has been horrendous for so many countries, and especially for the West. So I don't think that's a bad thing. But where are you going to get it from? Where are you going to get all your stuff as things are just shut down? It comes down to raw materials, I guess. Who's going to get their hands on raw materials to be able to do anything of this? Europe had their chips. What was it? Their Chips Act recently. They want to produce all these things. And who knows? Maybe that's just so that they can get their metaverse garbage in place, essentially, in due time. Everybody's going to be hooked to like a headset, essentially, at the end of this, if they get their way, right? All right, so I think that's it. I had some other stuff, but we have to save that to next time because we're a little bit over our time here. But I had some stuff on. They're having a very completely different topic here, but very exciting sexual education camps for 8 to 10 year olds in Indiana. There's people in Kentucky that have sexy summer camps for toddlers. Maybe we'll talk about that Friday. Mark Collett's going to come on guest host Flashback Friday with me. I'm going to get his take on. He's a dangerous pro-Russian, pro-Putin, just because he's seeing through the gay op with Ukraine, I guess. But anyway, so that's going to be interesting hearing more from Mark, what his take on this is. So he'll be guest hosting Friday with us, slated to do that normal time. Tomorrow, we have David Hiscox with us from Australia. He has xyz.au. Is it .au.net or something? Let me see the URL again. We are going to talk about the situation in, xyz.net.au. That's right. Good site, interesting stuff from Australia, coverage there, because things are still like insane there. It's New Zealand, it's been insane, right? We talked, they've covered some of the stuff on the LRAD stuff, but he's written on that and many other things. Just overall, the situation in Australia, that's like still going. And with all the stuff with COVID and stuff, we don't want to forget those kinds of things either as Ukraine is ramping up. So that's tomorrow. We are going live. We are scheduled to go live at, let's see, have 5 p.m. Pacific, I think it was. So 8 p.m. Eastern. That will be 2 a.m. Central European time. So tune in tomorrow for that. Yeah, we'll talk about LRAD, some of the stuff that they use against the protesters, the peaceful protesters in Australia. Overall, all the same thing there, really. All the World Economic Forum puppets that are in place in Australia, same in New Zealand. David, I think he knows a little bit about New Zealand too, but mostly Australia. And so after that, as I said, the following day, Friday, it's Mark Collett guest hosting. James Fitzgerald says, God damn it, I'm so grateful for you guys. Excellent coverage as always. No more sick time. Okay. Thank you, James. Good to see you as always. Thank you for the support. I hope that's over. It's just a residual, the stuff that I'm experiencing. But it's getting better. It's going to be, I appreciate it. We hate to see, I tell you, someone's going to be held accountable for all these, engineered viruses and stuff like that too. I hope this shit in Ukraine is going to be exposed with the biological labs and stuff that they're having there. They try to cover, like, vehemently try to cover that up right now. And I mean, if nothing else, it would be hilarious to see like Russia to get control of that. Not because I want them to release anything, but just to expose. Maybe they would be more honest about what they're doing there or something, just to get like to show the insane craziness of these people doing it. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see what comes out of that. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us today. Do appreciate you. We'll be back here with more soon then. If you want to check out our members' website, redicemembers.com, of course, get a membership over there. Let me show a couple of screens here, slides right at the end. If you want to join us, let me scroll back up here. Where are we? Here we go. Subscribestar.com/redice. You can join us over there. So Entropy actually is having payout issues because I think they use some Russian services right now as well. So I know that they're having some issues. They're looking for alternatives and stuff like that. But it's working on the pay side. It's just like the payout side is they're having some issues there. But Subscribestar is a really good option for now. So if you sign up over there, send us a message, a DM over there, or an email, redice@protonmail.com. Let us know that you've signed up, and we'll activate your account. We have the Cash App as well right there on screen for you. We have an e-check option. Some of you like that option. It's like paying a utility bill. As for the U.S. audience, I wish that was international, but it's not yet. I wish there were some other options. Crypto, of course, always works. And then we do have a, where are we here? There we are, a mailing address as well. Right there on screen if you prefer the good old-fashioned way. All right, ladies and gentlemen, hope you enjoyed the show today. Thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure having you with us. We'll be back with more tomorrow then with David Hiscox from XYZ down in Australia. And then Friday, we have Mark Collett guest hosting Flashback Friday with me. Until then, see you then. Thank you to all the support, everybody, both on Odyssey and also on Entropy Stream. We appreciate you. We'll be back with more soon. Keep fighting.
Do you love Red Ice? Want more? Get access to exclusive material by signing up for a Red Ice membership. You'll be able to watch Weekend Warrior, our flagship show, the second hour of interviews, and other special feature videos only for subscribers. Were you a member and we lost you along the way? Renew! We love and appreciate you guys and gals and cannot do this without you. Help us be a sane voice, a lighthouse in the sea of insanity. As times get tougher, as people are searching for answers, they're going to need content like Red Ice. A little of all your support can go a long way. Thank you.